Shalom and welcome to Tehillim Yomi. Today we learn Mizmor Pehei 85. It's very hard to pin down when or for what time period a psalm was written. Sometimes we have cues, historical references, other times we're left with conjecture. Psalm 85 discusses a seemingly quite joyous time and begins with the acknowledgement that God returned the restoration of Jacob. L'mnatzech v'nei korach Mizmor, Ratzita Adonai Artzecha, Shavta Shvut Yaakov, you've been favorable to your land. You've brought back the captivity of Jacob, or the restorers of Jacob. Ibn Ezra and others assume this refers to the exile after the destruction of the first temple and the return of Zion from Babylonia. Malbim concurs, suggesting that it was during the time of Ezra and Nehemiah. Radak, however, rejects this, saying that from verse 6, as we will learn, it seems that the exile describes much longer than the relatively short one of Babylonia. He posits that this psalm referred to the second exile, the one in which I live, says Radak, which he sees as much more protracted. The first 8 verses praise the actions of God using a lot of words which describes God's redeeming the nation. Nasata avon amecha, kisita kol chatatam, asafta kol evratecha, shivota mechorin apecha, shuveinu Elohe yishenu v'hafir kaschav imanu. You've forgiven the iniquity of your people, you've pardoned all their sins, you've withdrawn all your wrath, you've turned the fierceness of your anger, you restore us, God, for our salvation, cease your anger toward us. Now, the second half says, halo lam tanaf banu timshoch apcha l'dor b'dor. Restore us. Will you be angry with us forever? Will you draw us out your anger to all generations? Will you not revive us again that your people may rejoice in you? Show us your loving kindness, O Lord, and grant us salvation. Although it's possible to read these verses referring to the present, it sounds more likely that they are praising God for past actions, forgiving the sins, gathering the nation, returning the people, restoring his wrath. But then verse 6 turns to God with an accusation. Will you forever be angry with us? If this psalm is speaking of gratitude to God for redemption, why turn on God and claim he's still angry? Verse 7 seems to continue and starts with the question, hello, Ata, will you not? Wondering whether God will perhaps finish the restoration and they will finally be joyous. And verse 8 continues that theme, asking God to show us salvation. The switch of the first section leads some commentators to conclude that it must reflect the complicated era of the return to Zion in the Second Temple period. On the one hand, it's miraculous and a fulfillment of God's prophecy that after 70 years they will return. On the other hand, it was not complete. There were many challenges, and many of the miracles in the First Temple era did not return. Perhaps this is the reason for the incomplete description of joy in the psalm. The psalm then poses to wait for God's response. He stops mid-poems and says, Eshma'a mayidaber ha'el Adonai. Ki yidaber shalom el amo vel chasidav el yeshivu l'chisla. I will hear what God the Lord has to say. And then he pauses. And then he says, for he will speak peace to his people and the pious ones, and not let them turn back to foolishness. This seems to be a poetic tool, engaging the reader in his story, drawing us in to wait, too, for God's response. When it does not come, the psalmist continues to assume what God will say. He will speak of peace. Amos Chacham suggests that at that moment, the psalmist experiences a prophecy from God and presents God's actual words of peace, rather than just guessing what God has to say. Ach karov li reyav yisho, mishkon kavod baratzo. Surely his salvation is near to those who fear him, that glory may dwell in our land. To strengthen his previous position, he submits that God's salvation is close to the ones who fear him, that the peace from verse 8 is close to becoming actualized, but only for those who believe and follow. They will experience the dwelling of God's glory in our land. The possessive artseinu makes his message more personal. It's not a foreign esoteric concept. It is our land, and God's grace will make our experience complete. The next 4 verses continue this theme and confidently describe the redemptive period of God's absolute salvation. What will happen? Chesed ve'emet nifgashu. Tzedek v'shalom nashaku. Loving kindness and truth will meet. Truth will meet. Righteousness and peace will kiss. Waxing poetic, he describes a lofty picture of what it looks like when God brings salvation. Opposites find harmony. Kindness and truth meet. Justice and peace kiss. These opposing forces find unity in God's governance of the world, though we struggle to understand how. The vision of a complete redemption is when these contradictory emotions come together. The theme continues by saying, Emet me'eretz titzmach, v'tzedek mishamayim nishkaf. Truth will come from the earth, and justice will come down from the heaven. Explaining the nature of this union, he describes in verse 12 how truth will emanate from earth while justice from the heavens. Commentaries understand that this is a causal covenant, whereby the truth and positive actions of humans will bring God's rewards from the heavens. Thus, God will provide produce to our land. Gam Adonai yitein hatov v'artzeinu titein yivula. Thus, the final verse expresses the point in which God will roam the earth, and justice, the ultimate attribute of God's judgment, will go before him. Tzedek lefanav yahalech, yasem lederech pa'amav. Righteousness shall go before him and walk in the ways of his steps. This is due to the worthiness of the people, that justice will be the measure by which we are ultimately going to be judged. This is some kind of middle position of the thanking God for what we've arrived at, but still waiting for God to complete the final stages of redemption. When will that happen? Only when Israel is worthy of that, and then they will be worthy of God's justice to come down from the heavens, and the redemption will be complete.